This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Western and Southern Financial Group. Put our financial strength behind you. It's easy to get started. Visit WesternSouthern.com.
Now batting number one in our hearts. At least he'd like to think so. It's the Jim Day Podcast.
Don't look now, but we are back for the attack. It is the Jim Day Podcast. And we welcome back into the fold the new Marty Brenneman.
Oh no! Did my hair look that bad?
No, I'm talking. You made fun that Marty, the first year, was on, what'd you say, 27?
I think
times?
I said 22.
So it was actually like four times. Okay. Four or five times.
Just because we're doing it so quickly. Yeah, yeah, I'm not on that level yet. I don't have a Hall of Fame ring for being on the Jim Day Podcast yet.
Well, neither does he.
Oh, he's got something.
He lowered himself to be on here, but. Ladies and gentlemen, I haven't even introduced him.
Oh.
Back is Seb Liqueur.
Thanks, Jim.
Liqueur.
By the way, is that a like a fine after dinner drink?
Is that a French name or
yeah,
is that?
I think so.
You think you don't know?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Between me and Giesenschlag, I don't know what kind of, I don't know what we're running over here. Jim Day, we got an American, a German, and a Frenchman. I don't know what's happening, man. I'm always impressed that they pronounce it right on the opening for the ballot, you know, for like, and now your host, yeah. Brian Giesenschlag and Sam Liqueur. I mean, nobody can ever pronounce it because the way my last name, because Sam rolls into it, so everybody always thinks it's McClure. Now, where they get the second L after the C, I don't know. That must be a Midwest thing. Oh, wait, I'm from the West. But it's Sam Liqueur, you know, Sam Liqueur, like the M rolls into the last one. So, yeah, you can pronounce whatever you want.
Well, my name, I no one ever, rarely do I get just Jim.
I bring that up all the time. I mean,
it's Jim Day. It's the weirdest thing. And it's not something that I started like, hey, don't call me Jim. It's Jim Day.
Well, nobody ever throws it down to Jim. You know, it's not like, oh, and we've got Jim on the sideline.
Never.
Because it's easy to say. I mean, it's just two syllables.
I know.
I mean, it's boom, boom.
And, you know, there's been I've put up with a life full of puns.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. That's a good rhymer.
Yeah,
that's a good Jim Day's a good rhymer.
I tried. If I was ever gonna, I haven't had my official offspring to desecrate the earth, but if I did, I was, you know, like, what if I name my kid's middle name was like Crappy? Crappy Day.
Happy Day.
Happy Day.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So many ways you do that.
Yeah, sure.
We're already off the rails here.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure you're hoping did I hit go on this thing?
Yeah, I did, man. I'm my one man crew.
Yeah, your staff taking care of that for you, Jim.
Sam gets on me, so I put out a tweet about the podcast, and he's, are you speaking third person?
Well, at least I made it funny out of it.
Did. Well, I tried to make a response. Jim Day is happy with this post.
I see. It sounds like some of your listeners are too.
They did enjoy the first episode because they like lively conversations. You're a good interview man. You are, so it's all good.
Good.
So
a little editing and we're good to go.
If you stunk, we wouldn't be doing this right now.
Okay.
fair point. Talked about a lot of things. We talked about 2010, 2012. We talked about some former teammates, and we talked about a lot of things.
We covered some ground.
But
we just didn't feel quite done.
No, I didn't ask everything that I want to ask.
Okay.
So I wanted to just go through some teammates.
All right.
Just throw out some names. And then whether it be the first thing that comes to mind, like I'm not looking for you to go 10 minutes on each guy.
Okay, I'll be honest. I'll be honest.
Well, then I better start with someone that I know you're going to have probably good things to say about.
There's only there's only really one bad person that you can probably say about. Yeah.
Oh,
so we'll get. I'm sure you'll get there eventually.
Wow.
Now you're gonna be able to figure it out who it is pretty quick. I'd guess.
Now I'm on a mission.
Okay. Well, let's start with somebody I like. It's gonna be that. That'll be the easiest.
All right. I got
that'll
the 2010 okay. team up here.
Okay.
Ryan Hannigan.
Love Hanny.
I knew
great. You. I mean, I loved a couple things. You know, obviously catchers they're always going to say defense first. I love how hard Hanny, you know, how hard he worked behind the plate. Like he was always swaying. Some guys didn't like that. Like he was very flexible behind the plate, you know, would move around. He'd really show you. And I've noticed actually Tyler Stevenson doing this a little bit. What I love and next time he catches, watch it. Like, so he'll be sitting away for a slider or something like that. And if the guy's not or is hooking it too much,
right?
Like, he'll start, like, so he'll sit on the corner over here, but put his glove over there. Like, here's your starting point. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
So I haven't noticed that.
I noticed it last night.
And I usually notice those little things. I have not noticed that.
I noticed it. I forget who it was, but I definitely noticed it. Sorry, I dated you a little bit, but
that's all right. Well, that's a big target too. Like, he's
got
his arm. He's
he
a,
it was
glove over here, body over here. That's a huge.
Yeah,
target.
He had it all covered. But I loved it. Hanny would always kind of show me where he wanted it to start and kind of drag his glove over to kind of where he had it envisioned that it would finish. So I loved throwing to him big time.
What was his nickname? Stinky.
Yeah. You knew that. I mean, what do you like? That wasn't a question, Jim.
No, I couldn't. I wanted to remember because I remember an umpire.
Yeah, he stunk.
An umpire was not real happy.
He was
because...
natural man, and he was a natural man. Okay.
Home plate umpire literally came over and said, "You need to do something with your boy here. He stinks."
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Because he could sweat now and that catcher's
well,
gear.
He was natural man. He wasn't all over the Irish Spring. You know what I mean? Like he was a natural man, but that's fine. I mean, it was, you know, it's like one of those deals that, you know, an endearing quality, as long as you weren't the home plate umpire, having to sit that back there and smell his tuchus.
It was like an August day and it was like,
next guy.
I love Ryan.
I do too.
He was great to be around. He just always looked like he needed a bath.
And for the most part, did.
But what a great! I know the
swinging Hanny.
No, yeah,
that's what we'd always used to say. Swinging. I don't know where it came from, but
really?
It was always you saw Hannigan walk swinging Hanny just across the locker room. Swing it. I don't know.
I know the pitchers loved the throw to him.
Oh
so.
Yeah.
Let's see here, Joey Votto.
Joey Votto was always kind of an enigma to me as far as like for me to get in. To him, I mean, as you know,
back
Jim,
then he was different.
He was than he is now. In what way? Yeah,
he was.
I feel like he was much more to himself back when.
Way more. But it took me years to crack that shell.
Yeah, and so I didn't. You know, at the time, you know, I'm up. Like he wins the MVP in 2010. Like he's the best player in the world. You know, and I'm kind of rook, but we're close to the same age. And you know, obviously he's. You know, I mean. He's a little socially awkward. I mean, just and part of it is I think I don't know exactly. I know some of it, you know, it's Canadian upbringing, man. They're very polite, very that way. It comes off that way to some degree. But even after the fact, you know, then I kind of joined the media squad. I'm like, well, how's that going to, you know, endear me to my former teammates? Like, I want them to trust me to talk to me like Sam, you know, like their former teammate, but it's coming more and more. He actually lives near me, in the off season. So I ran into him at yoga one day and like, you know, and kind of picked back up some banter. Like it was never like, we were never best friends, never, you know, whatever, but he was always probably just like anybody else, you know, that watches him on TV and is kind of curious, you know, you're curious about him. I'm like, what's under the hood here? You've done as good a job as anybody of kind of figuring some of that stuff out. Obviously Jay and, you know, but Joey's just reserved about his business. And that's how Joey always kind of came off to me, you know, kind of, he was just so focused into what his daily routine was that there wasn't a whole lot of time. He was too busy being great kind of thing.
I've never seen anyone, he's completely locked in. Yeah. It's like we have done two podcasts and I made sure, in fact, 2020, was it 2000? Yeah, I don't know. The years are bleeding together with this COVID stuff. I went to spring training a week early with the sole purpose of getting Joey Votto on the podcast, because once he gets started in his routine, forget it. Yeah, it's not happening. Yeah. I'm not getting an hour from him.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, and I think it's great that back then people didn't want you to show all your well, at least within the game, you know, it wasn't go out and show your personality and, you know, be boisterous, bat flip, do this, do all the, you know, that stuff that's they encourage nowadays. They want guys to show their personality. So I'm happy for him that I feel like maybe he thought that he couldn't do that at one point, and he shows his personality a lot more now, you know. I'm happy for him. I'm happy for, you know, Cincinnati to get to see that, like, Joey's not just this completely stoic, you know, fun vacuum, whatever. Like, he's having fun too, man.
No, he is. He's so smart. He's just so, like, he's calculated on everything that he does and says. He's very calculated.
Yep.
And he's a funny guy. And I'm glad that that has come out.
Me too.
In some respects. And watching him at his craft was outstanding. Especially back
there. Pretty something to watch,
2010. Wasn't that the MVP year?
Yep. I mean, I'm gonna guess numbers here for you.
All right.
324, 37, 114.
324 is right on the money. What'd you say?
37.
37.
114.
113. Wow, that was close. That's pretty impressive. Now, how do you remember that?
I don't know. Ask me anything.
What is the square root of? No.
3.14. Oh, wait, that's pi.
That's pi, yeah. Wow. You had that, like, you almost nailed that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
324, 37 bombs, 103rd. Now, if you give me his OPS, I'm going to just go. You probably.
No.
Okay.
That wasn't a thing back then, dude.
It really wasn't.
OPS was literally like nobody. You'd never heard of OPS.
I bet it was with him, though. He was probably ahead of that curve a little bit.
All right. What else you got?
All right. Let's go. Let's see here. Jay Bruce.
Love. I mean, Jay Bruce. We
talked about him on the first episode.
Yeah, he's special to me. I know we touched on some of that yesterday just to get through. You know, being drafted together, spent time together in the minor leagues, coming up through, and then to get to share, you know, some moments with him and see him, even though younger than me, you know, feeling like I learned from him. Yeah. Hopefully he learned something from me at some point, but I definitely learned from him on the way he carried himself and, you know, all the way right to that last press conference, man. Like, I've watched it several times. Every time I watch it, I get goosebumps, like I'm watching, you know, glad. I don't know. I mean, I still, like, the hair stands up thinking about just what a great quality guy he is, and, you know, to watch him have success and, you know, to still follow. I mean, I follow all these guys still, you know, when I got done playing, when they went to other teams, I still follow them. I mean, when I go to a box score, I'm going to it to look up what they did, you know, and to BS with them a little bit. So I love Jay, man. And I think that was pretty consensus.
Phone's ringing. Should I answer it?
Well, it depends on who it is.
Scott Rowland. What's happening? He wants to know if you just got called up.
I was wondering where I was like, no way you're actually answering the phone.
That was a funny story. That now, he would never call me. I'd have to call him and leave 50
minutes. I text him every time I'm driving through Christmas, Indiana.
Do you really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's also exit 63. So my number was 63, and that is the exit for Christmas, Indiana.
Indiana.
And he grew up in that vicinity, I'll say.
Right.
So I was texting
Evansville vicinity.
Jasper-ish. Yeah.
Jasper-ish.
I was texting him to say something like, man, really stinks here and wherever it is. Yeah.
I love the story you told.
Isn't that good?
First podcast. By the way, if you're just picking us up, go into the archives. You don't have to go far back for episode one with Sam.
Got to go all the way to last week.
Yeah. Johnny Gomes.
Johnny Gomes was, I mean, at first it can be real intimidating, if you can imagine, you know.
Oh, no, I went through that.
Yeah.
With interviews.
Not like Scott was intimidating just like with the big hulking presence, but like now you got a big hulking presence that looks like he rode a Harley there, you know, and is intense. And you've seen him in fighting and brawls before he got to your team. So he was in AAA 2010, I think. So this will be a good little John. This will tell you maybe a little bit what I think about Johnny Gomes.
All right.
So we got up there, and he's, you know, when he speaks with a tone, and you hear it, and that's fine, and that's good. I'm okay. I'm totally okay with that. So love Johnny Gomes. Loves what he brings. I get called up first in 2010. So make the one start, and the next start's in St. Louis. And Johnny, to that point, so that's, this is, we're now rolled into June of that season. So Johnny's hitting about 900 with runners in scoring position. That's, you know, that year. I'm pretty sure Tony La Russa is still managing in 2010. Pretty sure.
Yeah.
So he gets, you know, it seemed like we were playing the Cardinals. It seemed like a couple times he, throughout that season already, he'd been hit by pitches with a base open and runners in scoring position. It might have been runners in scoring position, two outs. Like, it was pretty specific, the stat. And so he came in, you know, after getting plunked after an inning or something like that, and he's like, said something. I can't remember exactly what the tone it was, and I'm sure if I'd said it verbatim, it'd have to be edited anyway. But something along the lines of, hey, you know, somebody pick me up or something like that. And so I'm happened to be pitching that game, you know, and you know, I pay attention to that stuff, man. I never liked for people, and obviously this is a pretty hot button right now, just as far as throwing at people, but I don't think anybody cared if I threw at him. It was like throwing a grape. But I didn't like to be told like when to do that, because I was paying attention to the game, and
you knew when
I knew what was going on, and I knew when somebody needed to be protected and something, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, I needed a little push in the direction there because I hadn't been up all season. You know, I wasn't watching this go on,
right,
you know, as it was going on. But the fact that he said something like, okay, I'm a rookie. Like, I want the respect of my teammates. Like, how do I go get it? I mean, that's not what I was thinking in the moment, but right. I was certainly aware of what was happening and what was being said. So get out there. I mean, it couldn't set up any better, man. Get the first two guys out of the inning. Boom, boom. Nobody on, two outs.
Perfect.
First pitch. Sorry about your ribs, Yadier Molina.
I don't know why that made me laugh.
Next pitch. Sorry about the line drive hit right at Johnny Gomes that he misplays into a triple, and the guy comes around and scores. Brandon Ryan. I mean, this guy couldn't hit his way out of a wet paper bag.
He enticed you into
to hitting the guy, and then cost me a run on it. They cost me a triple and another run. I mean, the next inning.
That's brutal.
Didn't change anything about the way I thought about it. I mean, that's the way it goes. Whatever. The guy hit the ball hard. It was would have been. I mean, I understand it was a tough read. So Johnny Gomes. Yep. So I think I felt
For Molina to score from first, it must have been a heck of an error.
Well, I mean, it wasn't an error. Oh. It was a line drive hit right at him. I mean, he bolts in right at it. And I mean, he didn't have time to take but two or three steps, and then all of a sudden he's jumping. Yeah. I mean, it went right. If he wouldn't have moved, it would have hit him in the face.
Yeah.
Type of thing. So, yep, got that deal. But I certainly feel like after that, Johnny had my back, and of a lot of guys on the team. If you're going to go into a scrum, I'm gonna be happy to have him there with me. So first guy hit intentionally in the big leagues, Yadier Molina.
Wow.
And I hate that because I know Reds fans don't love him. I respect him a lot.
Oh, I have a ton of respect for him. Yeah. I mean, he's unbelievable to watch behind the
he's
plate.
He's unbelievable.
It's like if
you know the real nuance of it, I mean, you know, Jim, you've watched it for a long time too. Like,
he's the best. It's uncanny. It's unbelievable.
To control a game from sitting down back there like he does.
No, he's the second manager on the field, if not the first manager. He's the pitching coach. First, he's the catcher. He's the captain. He's literally everything.
Yep.
And some people are just born to do something.
No doubt.
And he is.
He's only third in the family.
Yeah. God gifted to catch. It's so natural. It just looks
fun
like
to watch.
If you were going to put a mold together or design the perfect guy behind the plate.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Pretty close, man. I mean, it's like, who do you start?
I would probably design Johnny Bench just because I'm a Johnny Bench guy. Yeah. But if nowadays, man.
Yep.
I mean,
yep, he's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I know. People are like, "Boo!"
Yeah, well,
stop talking
about him. This episode's not going to get quite the flair as the first one. Anyhow, next guy.
No, that's fine. We'll just make him feel comfortable. Boo!
Boo!
Thank you.
Yep.
Who we got on the list here? Brandon Phillips.
Brandon. Brandon always kind of had the locker down towards the far end of the clubhouse, kind of secluded. To a large degree, you know where it was.
Yep.
And so if you're a rookie or stupid rookie or reliever, you're kind of down.
You're right down
there. Yeah, if you got the number 63 or above, you're kind of down in that end of town. But Brandon was odd too. Like, Brandon was kind of real quiet in the clubhouse unless there was a camera around. and then was so, you know, interactive with, like, didn't interact with me a ton. And a lot of that dude was, you know, relievers kind of stuck together. Starting pitchers had their thing on the bench and position player. I mean, that's just, it wasn't clicky. It was just, that's who you were with, you know? So to some degree, I didn't interact with him a ton. The longer I was there, I got another good Brandon Phillips story too. The longer I was there,
I want the story.
You'll get it. You'll get it. So didn't interact a ton, but just then to watch him go out and be so interactive with the fans, it was almost like, oh man, like, I think you're like cool and fun. Like, you know, I want to be buddies too, kind of thing. But that just, you know, some guys were different. Like, he was there. Like,
he was good for what I did.
He was, no doubt.
Because he would just
clown. He would just clown.
Clown, like, totally. But he would, the light would switch would go off. Like, he would hit the steps coming out of the dugout, and it's like a different person.
No doubt. It was. But it was also kind of like, you felt like, for me, and I'm talking just for me, like, I felt cheated a little bit. I wanted some of that too, you know? I wanted that in the clubhouse. And but, man, to watch him play was he had an imagination and instinct, and he was a lot of fun to watch play, to play defense. So Brandon Phillips' story was, I believe it was my first spring training, major league spring training, 2000, and was still in Sarasota. So the last spring training in Sarasota, 8 or 9?
Yeah. Wow, man. Like 8.
Anyhow, I think it was the last spring training in Sarasota. So I was number 78 that year. So it was a year after we had, I know Yonder Alonso was there. So it was his first spring training. So you could date it, figure it out that way. So I pitched or something and was in the training room and kind of getting my, you know, ice on or getting stretches or whatever it was. I was not supposed, I mean, you know, if Arthur Rhodes would have walked around the corner, I'd have hid somewhere in the training. Like, I wouldn't, you know, they didn't like you in there. The young kids, you don't want you in there. But Brandon's in there and, you know, talking about, oh man, I got to go out here and face another number 98 or something like that. And I was sitting there with 78 on my back and I'm like, mother, you know, like in my head. And I, you know, when I got to the big leagues, like, I was number 21 all my life. I mean, I think because at that
for
time,
Clemens or
for Clemens, I was like kind of my favorite guy at that time. It turned and morphed into Maddox once I started throwing slower. But I used to be able to throw a little bit harder. So I loved Roger Clemens, had wore number 21 all my life. I had, like, my high school, they never had a number 21. I had to make it.
Really?
And now it's retired. Salt, shameless plug.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So, and then would have worn it in college, but went to the college that Roger Clemens went to, and it was retired. And then wore it all through the minor leagues. So if I'd have had my choice, I would have chosen, and Chris Dickerson was wearing it in the big leagues. Or I would have, but he left after that year, and I could have switched to it. And I was like, no, like, I'm going to stick with number 63 because I'm not, because even though I'm not a number 21, thinking about the Brandon Phillips conversation, like, I can be a seven, I can get people out with number 78. I can get people out with 90, whatever it was. That always kind of stuck with me. And funny story about 63 is that, so when I got there, Chris Dickerson had it. So the next multiple of that would have been 42. Obviously, Jackie Robinson, 63 is the next multiple of 21.
So that's, you know, I was told there was no math with this gig.
I just did it for you, baby. That's the only math I can
do. Look at you, though, going all...
That's the only math I can do.
So it's 21, you know, 3 times of 21. You're... Wow.
Yep. So that's why I end up... And I didn't ask for that number. Like, you know, so I was 78 the one spring training. The next spring training, I was 63. And just... I didn't even... At the time, I wasn't thinking that way. And they're like, you can change your number? I was like, I don't know when the light bulb went on, but I was like, that's 21.
Yeah, but people remember you as 63. There's so many 21s.
I can't believe they pulled it out of retirement for Doolittle. I mean, that's unbelievable. I had to ask the commissioner about that. I was like, man.
I know. They took it off the facade in the stadium. It's unbelievable that it's not hanging up there anymore.
Yeah.
It's crazy, kooky.
Yep.
Now, I'm not going to go through the whole entire roster
here. I know, because every time you say one of them, I got a 10-minute
that's
damn
all right.
story.
I might have to come back to one if I don't get the guy you don't like, but we're going to go to some pitchers here.
You're going to have to go to a different year in 2010.
Ah, okay. There we go. There we go. But we're going to have to go to the pitching staff here.
Okay, let's do it.
this Love is him. Good. This might be a 30-minute answer. I don't know. Bronson Arroyo.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, could be. If it's anything like him, I mean, you know him. You've had him on, right?
He's the best.
He's the best.
I had to do part two with him. Two-parter with him, yes. He was so good.
I can imagine that.
Yeah. He was one of the first ones, actually.
Was he?
Yeah.
He's great, man. I mean, I love Bronson and just everything about what he was, about what he was to baseball. You know, I mean, he was, you know, your kind of lanky guy who didn't look like, oh, was he ever going to hold up? And then he throws 200 innings 9 years in a row. Would have been 10 years in a row, except he hit 199. I remember that game. We were in New York, threw a complete game. Last game, his last outing of the year to get to 199. We went to extra innings, and we're wondering if Dusty was going to send him back out there, you know, to get 200.
Right.
You know, and the way he treated everybody, I mean, he was the same dude to everybody. Like,
he was
the same dude.
He was so genuine. He was one of those guys that when you're talking to him, he will look you directly in the eye as if you're the only person in the room.
Yeah.
Like, you're the only person that matters. And
very,
I saw him do that with just any fan, anyone.
Almost to uncomfortability. Like, he's so locked in. I mean, you know, but no, I love Bronson. We've had some fun times, you know, playing together, obviously. And now I was down a couple of years ago, was down in Mexico with a bunch of my college buddies. And who do I see walking across the way? I mean, he's there. And then all of a sudden it turns into a thing. So we're out on the golf. You know, he goes and plays golf with us the next day.
Yeah.
And no, we keep in good touch. I mean, real good touch. Obviously, he's, you know, in and out of here a good bit. So haven't gotten to hook up with him yet. But, yep, love me some
He
Bronson.
Was what every single man wanted to be. He was like, seriously. No, seriously. He was like the man. That guy's got a
he's
good
cool.
life right
yeah,
there.
No
he's
doubt.
Cool.
Yeah,
that guy, cool. If there's a cool.
He's going to pitch in the big leagues, and then he's going to go after the game and get on stage with Pearl Jam and sing with or do something with the Red Hot Chili. You know, it's like, what?
Yeah, no, he's just has it all. He's got the personality. He's
And nothing's too big, you know, but humble. And nothing
humble, just
everybody's a dude. Eddie Vedder's a dude. Sam LaCure's, you know,
he's unbelievable. And people say, "Oh, who are the best interviews?" I'm like, Bronson Arroyo.
Easy.
I mean, him and Casey probably are the
Johnny. Wind Johnny Bench up and watch him go. I mean, holy smokes, wind him up.
I remember a producer said, "All right, we want you to do a segment with Johnny Bench. I've got 2 minutes.
2 minutes? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no kidding."
What are you gonna? What do you want me to ask him his full name?
I did something with him. It was in like the last year. Oh, it was the Hot Stove League, and we had him on. And I asked one question. The segment was like 15 minutes. He went the entire segment
on one question.
Just segued from here to here. He knew what he wanted to cover here to here to here to here to here. And I'm like, thanks, Johnny.
Yeah,
we'll be back after this.
Yeah. Well, next segment. Yep. Yep, he is unbelievable.
Yeah, he really is. But Bronson, I'll never forget when Arroyo showed up. This was before you had arrived. This was in Sarasota when he first got traded over. I'm standing in the clubhouse, and he had just gotten his hair done. And it was like,
Jeez,
it was
hair.
Long, but it was like
poofed up.
It was like really, you know, after he gets it done.
It hadn't gotten it treated yet.
Yeah, it was really poofed up. And I'm like, my first thought was, Is this
a new clubhouse guy?
Who is this guy? The first impression was like, oh man, he's not going to fit in. Never been more wrong.
No
in my
doubt.
Life
right.
On first appearances because
Smokey.
Oh, what a great guy.
Yep.
I mean, to this day, if I called him up and needed something,
that's what I think
he will.
It's bend heaven and earth kind of thing.
Unbelievable.
Dude. It's the most giving dude.
And the way that he took care of the clubbies and
still does.
I love the story where he said, I promise you, after I'm done playing, I'm going to come and clean the spikes with you guys.
He's probably done it multiple times.
Multiple times. He's not doing it for show. He doesn't want, there's no cameras around. He literally will clean the spikes of the entire team.
That is a pretty good representation of like how much you miss the clubhouse when you can't be in it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I don't even care. I'll go down there and clean spikes just to sit around and just.
Yeah.
Be amongst the boys, you know.
Well, so. Brian Bryce brought him back just to be around the boys.
Yeah. I know. I was kind of hoping to get that gig. Like, hey, dude, like, you need somebody down to sit down in the bullpen and act wise?
Well, he would. I'd look at the schedule each day in spring training. It'd be like, you know, team catcher meeting, team pitcher meeting, blah, blah, blah. And there'd always be story time with Bronson.
You're kidding me.
No, on the spring training schedule. Goodness. Brian Price had it scheduled out, story time with Bronson.
I would have
been
part of that.
Would stand up and tell stories. No, I'm not allowed in there. Media wasn't allowed in there. I mean, I heard some of the stories. I can't.
I'm sure you've heard some of the plenty of the stories.
But story time with Bronson was the best. I just like, wow, this guy is so good in the clubhouse that a manager has carved out time for him to stand up and talk.
Where all the stupid rookies sit around cross-legged on the ground while Uncle Bronson sits there with a picture book flipping pages and the cow jumped over the moon.
Yeah. And if some of these guys only knew, like, dude only threw like 80-some miles per hour.
They call that 80-poo, Jim. 80-poo. I'm familiar with that syndrome.
Oh, I used to love to watch him pitch. Gosh.
I'd still go watch him pitch.
Yeah, no.
Arm angles, just making stuff up.
Totally making stuff up on the fly.
You could not get a scouting report by me as a reliever trying to like, why pay attention to him?
One of the best at reading hitters.
Oh, man.
And just, like, I would love to pitchers. That's one thing I think is lacking with pitchers nowadays is reading hitters. I think that art form is going away, unfortunately.
That's pretty near gone.
Yeah, I would send pitchers to Bronson Arroyo, read the hitter school.
Yeah.
I mean, like, look at video, like, all right, look, because he would, all right, dude's leaning out. I'm not going to go through all the intricacies, but some guy doing one little thing, and he knew exactly where he wasn't going to hit.
Well, you throw about 2,000 innings in the big leagues, and you figure that out.
I know.
I mean, what? No, I mean.
We could do a whole show on just people talking about Bronson Arroyo, but. Maybe we'll do that part three.
Oh, boy.
Johnny Cueto.
Since they just played him, you know, not too long ago. I was kind of going down memory lane with him. The first thing that sticks out in my mind is when he got called up to AA and I was there and he was kind of on his rise. You know, I think that must have been 2008 or 2007. I think he broke with the team in 2008. He came up and to AA and was just, I mean, you could just tell he was different, you know, the ball jumping out of his hand, the ability to command it at that level, land strikes with his slider was really good. And then the next spring training, you know, he was kind of not really on a bunch of maps at that point. And then I go to spring training next year and he's wearing Nike and he just looks down at his shoes. He's like, Nike, my bad. And like, that's where he really can speak, you know, much English. And he got a lot better at that. So I remember that stuck out to me. Obviously, you know, 2012 against the Giants is always going to stick out. But I love Johnny Cueto's start day. I mean, we won a lot of games on Johnny Cueto day because he was really, really good.
Really
probably
good.
I mean, I think he got snubbed of a Cy Young. I can't remember which year it was. Threw 243 innings, I think, with a 2.25.
Yeah,
I think they gave it. Clayton Kershaw had like a sub-2, but in 170 innings or something like that. I mean, 243 innings.
Yeah,
my word. But he had so much fun before starts. I mean, his pregame warm-up routine was cranking up some reggaeton and dancing in front of. I mean, he just dance.
Oh, really?
Dude,
I never knew this.
Oh my God. Oh, so
I love finding out things I didn't know.
So, I mean, that was the best. Like,
before the start, he would dance.
He would dance like in his locker. I mean, like doing, folks, you're not going to be able to see this, but I mean, I'm talking like he is. And then like doing high knees, like dancing, he'd gyrate. Well, let's call it that. You know, he just spinning around his chair like he's doing some kind of a tease or whatever. Oh my. And so
never knew
then
this.
It became like guys joining in. I mean, I still have songs on my phone that I, you know, the Shazam app where you can listen, what that I got off of Shazam from listening to Johnny Cueto dance like Latin music on
That's
my phone.
That's awesome.
That dude, that was the best. So
I love that.
We had a lot of fun because we won because he was really good, but we were having fun. Like when he was like, he was ready to go out there and have fun. And when he stepped between the lines, he was having fun, but he had fun competing his butt off. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who could read swings. If Bronson could have had Johnny Cueto's stuff, he might still be pitching. But, Johnny was unbelievable. I'm happy to see him still pitching. He was, you know, he was a good cat, man.
He was one of the – his body type, if you were to
– What's that? Toad?
J. Johnny, Sam said that, not me.
In English, por favor, no comprende.
If you were going to line up the team and say, all right, who runs the steps the most? You would choose him last.
Last.
But
he's run every step in every stadium and every
ballpark.
It's unbelievable.
And I know Dusty got him on that because Dusty told him, listen, back in my day, they didn't lift weights. But one thing that they did, and the Dodger pitching staff when Dusty played was outstanding. One thing they did was they ran. They worked their legs and they ran every day and they ran the steps. Yep. And he took that to heart and he ran those steps. It was, I mean, it was unbelievable the work that he put in.
Ran it right into a $130 million deal with the Giants, what he did now. Ran it to a World Series. Yeah. Ran it to the Giants.
Yeah. Right. But you mentioned his English got better.
It's much better.
Yeah, oh no, much better. But we never got to see it because he'd always use the interpreter. I would absolutely use an interpreter if I was in a foreign country.
No doubt.
There is no question. The guys that don't, I think, are so courageous
they
to
are.
Do it. Because
like Gino's some I mean
yeah, some like of the Johnny questions are asked like and Gino. it can come across in the wrong way
no
because
doubt.
I mean if I had to speak in Spanish answering questions from the media, I couldn't do it. I would end up saying something wrong.
Right.
I would use an interpreter. So those guys that don't are very courageous.
Johnny C, you know me.
Yeah. Oh, man, he was fun to watch pitch. We'll continue our conversation with Sam LeCure right after this message from Western and Southern Financial Group.
Life is full of questions. Like, when should I start thinking about life insurance? But however difficult these questions may be, Western and Southern can help you answer them. Backed by over 130 years of experience, together we can look ahead to leave the unknown behind. Western and Southern Financial Group, life insurance, retirement, and investments.
Compensated endorser, products issued by member companies of Western and Southern Financial Group, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Mike Leake.
So Leaker, I thought it was really cool. Obviously what he did, go straight to the big leagues. He was kind of like, I don't know. I never had a little brother, and I wouldn't say he was like, I loved him like a little. He was like an annoying little brother. That's what Mike Leake
exactly
was.
That's what
to
I
me.
Was going to say.
Yeah, he was an annoying
was like
little brother.
To a
I
lot
wanted
of people.
Slack go upside his head for the most part. Just like always kind of poking you, ribbing you, like, dude,
always,
all right, enough. All right, I'm gonna punch you in the chest. I did one time. I was over there playing with a yo-yo. I just, for some reason, I had an infatuation with yo-yos that spring training. And I'm over there playing with the yo-yo, and he's over there keep trying to yo-yo around about it. I was like, Leake, enough. I was like, stop it, I'm going to hit you. He did it one more time. I hit him right in the chest. I was like, dude. But he was fun to watch pitch because he was really, I mean, he was, you know, he learned from Bronson a lot, but he was that guy when he got there. Like, he really had feel to be able to command and move the ball around. I loved his cutter. He had a great cutter that he'd throw in off to righties.
The pace at which he pitched.
He did. And I loved to watch him play defense. And I loved the fact he was a little athlete, man.
Good
athlete. No doubt. So, but yeah, annoying little brother. That's not the guy. You're about to say him right now, though. You're looking right at him.
I am?
Yep.
I don't think this is the guy. I don't think this. Maybe it's the guy. I don't know.
Are we still on the pitching staff?
Yeah, but this is 2010, though. You said 2012.
Oh, I told you need to change years.
Yeah, no, I'm still on 2010. I don't think this is the guy because I think you like this guy, but he was often misunderstood, this guy.
Mm.
It's sometimes not misunderstood. Sometimes he was just, you understood him, and sometimes you didn't like what he had to say. Homer Bailey.
Oh, I love Homer.
Yeah.
I'm the one guy.
Look,
you don't have to go on and say, oh, no, Homer was fine. You don't have to give me the lip service. Let me tell you who's not listening to your podcast, Homer. Okay?
Well, you can book that.
Yeah, you can book it. I love Homer. Homer and I have spent a ton of time together. So my first instructional league, he was there. We were on the same starting rotation my first year in Sarasota when the High A was there. I think I caught him a little bit in Double A, maybe not. He went off pretty good. Like that next year in 2007, he got to Double A and he was kind of like really mowing and moved up pretty quick. But Homer and I, we drove from Texas to Sarasota together. We drove from Texas to Arizona spring training together. Hunted together still. I mean, I saw him. I was down in Austin a couple months ago. We went and had lunch together. I mean, we keep really good touch. Homer's
in the Austin area?
Yeah.
He's not in Houston?
Austin. No, his hometown is LaGrange.
Yeah.
And that's about an hour outside of Austin or so. So he's always in that area, just building a house down there in LaGrange now. I said, is your house going to stick out down there? He's like, yeah, a little bit. But yeah. If you've been to LaGrange, it could be a two-story ranch-style house and it'd stick out.
He made just a little bit of money.
He made just a little bit, man. And he was, like, on it, too. I mean, your body deceives you, you know, really. Well, and I hate to see it when guys just sign a big deal because – It almost seems inevitable anymore. Like they're going to sign for a bunch of money and they're not going to play for half of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate that, but I love Homer is Homer. Yeah. Like Homer's the same honorary old cuss now that he was then, you know, and that's like he's a cowboy and that's who he is. Yep. Like Homer's a cowboy.
There's no doubt.
Like, but a real cowboy.
He walked into the clubhouse and he had just come from his stables where he had, had horses up here.
He's got a lasso around his neck.
Had a lasso, had a cowboy hat, had what are the
chaps?
Leather chaps. He had the chaps on, he had the cowboy boots on, had the lasso, had a knife about went down half
Rambo.
His knee. But I'm like, yeah, no, this is no joke. He's truly a cowboy. I mean, he wasn't like, I love Jeff Brantley, not a cowboy.
Not a cowboy.
He'll be the first to tell you, not a cowboy, but Homer, true cowboy. I mean, really was a cowboy. And I'm not giving you lip service. I got along with Homer fine.
Oh, I mean,
I got along with him fine because I realized, like, it's just what he is.
He's
going to tell me, if he doesn't want to do an interview, he's going to tell me in a way that just,
but
like,
imagine
get
being
out
the
here.
Next Nolan Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, before you ever, he's in Double A and there's billboards of him in Cincinnati.
Right.
Like, you just can never live up to that. Unless, I guess you're Jay Bruce. Jay Bruce kind of did, you know.
He did.
Jay Bruce was.
Yeah, because he was the number one prospect in baseball at one point, Jay Bruce.
I think they both were at some point.
Yeah.
You know? That's why those.
We're being stalked by John Sadak over your shoulder.
Those teams in those early, you know, the two that I was around, I mean, that was a lot of homegrown talent. They drafted really well there.
Yeah. All right. I got to go to.
Is this what we're doing?
No, we're going to go to 2012 here because I got other things I want to talk to you about. So we can't spend it all on the players.
This is definitely, then we're, oh my God, I am going to be Marty.
Is this the pitching staff that I'm going to?
I don't know. Where are you going? I can't see your little computer.
I'm going to the 2012 Cincinnati Reds.
Okay. Best team in baseball.
I guess we're going to go to the pitchers, right?
All the way until game three.
Oh, I should have known this. This is an easy one. Matt Latos.
Boom.
That's an easy one.
I mean, I don't even know if I can get into that. Like, I just.
No, you probably.
I mean, they're just like. I just kind of loathe the dude. I didn't. And I'm not. And look, man, that's kind of. I don't want to go too far because there is a line, you know, that's the clubhouse line and
you know,
all that stuff. But I just didn't like the way he went about things. I didn't.
He was tough to be around.
He was, especially when it wasn't going his way. You know, it's hard to put up with that stuff. Period. When they're going good, you know, if he's out there going good and winning games for the team, I'll put up with it. You know, because like, okay, hey, this is all about winning ball games. Like, so if you're going out there and you're helping us win ball games, which for the most part he did. Yeah. He went 14-4 2 years in a row here, I think.
Yeah.
So with an ERA somewhere between 3 and 3.14. Ish. And so that was what it was. But when he's not going good and he's still got that same act, like that's tough. Like that's tough for me to put up with and just, you know, other things. But yeah, he was the one guy, and that was before he gave up the grand slam to Buster Posey. He was the one guy in my career that I did not really like to go to battle for.
I got to ask you about Ludwig real quick in 2012.
He's one of my all-time favorite teammates, creating the cup
in the first episode. But just as a guy, Ludwig, he was fun to be around.
I mean, even
though he's a former Cardinal.
I got to see that silver slugger he won with the Cardinals while I was go to his house when I was living down in Austin. He lives outside of Austin. We still keep in great, great touch. I talk to him, you know, once a month probably or something like that. So, he and I had the same agent, so my agent was always saying, oh, you guys would get along great. And Jason Isringhausen was another guy that my agent had who, you were talking about, that guy's a nut. strongest guy ever in the world. Luddy and I got along great, man. He really brought us so much energy to that team that year. You know, looked like the greatest signing of all time. And I think the first game of the next year, he's diving into third base and they blows his shoulder out. But yeah, 2012, like we don't get there because Joey went. I remember Joey about 50 games. I think he played like 55 games that season, or maybe I think in 2012. But hit like, I mean, hit 355. Maybe it was 355 he hit, but he didn't play a ton of games that year. Joey didn't. And Luddy comes in, and so Frazier goes from kind of moving around the field. Frazier was indispensable in those years, man. You want to talk about a guy like Roland would go down, Frazier play third. Votto goes down, Frazier play first. Somebody goes down, Frazier plays there. But Luddy then goes out to left field and goes 26 and 85, 80 or 85, you know, that year. And, you know, kind of that cup thing, really. Like, yeah, like that may have been the whole season. In that cup right there. I mean, we're good no matter how you sliced it, but you know, when you have something that is that everybody can touch, you know, and like that was I think even the cool thing, you could actually touch this thing. It was tangible.
I loved the cup. I think every team should have something
I
like
guarantee
that.
You Mazzarocco's got it.
That was what I was going to ask you.
I guarantee you he's got it up in Punxsutawney.
He
got a freaking gopher in it.
Punxsutawney.
Yeah. but yeah, so he, I mean, just the energy he brought that year, obviously the bat, had great, I've got great, great memories with Ryan. First time I ever rode on a private plane was with him on a day that was my birthday that I got the win in against the Cardinals that he had a walk-off home run in. And after the game, because it was Sunday game, off day, two games Boston. So he wanted to go up. Early, he's like, "You want to come up?" I was like, "Yeah, it's my birthday. I've never been on a private plane. Sure, that sounds good to me." And so, I think the last guy I struck out Yachty in the bottom in the top of the 10th inning. Luddy comes off, hits a scraper right over the wall, home run, and like he's coming home. And I remember they had a big billboard of it somewhere, and somebody sent it to me on Twitter. Air Liqueur, like I mean, I am way up above the scrum at home plate. You know, like as he's touching home plate. And then we got on a plane after the game and flew up to Boston and went and had some oysters and went to the Cheers bar.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was one of my coolest 24 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, did not know that. By the way, you just held up your arm. I've never asked you this. What is the tattoo that is on, what is that, your
inner? Right bicep.
Right bicep.
That is, it's Balinese. So I went, a couple years ago, I guess 2017. 2017 and around October, November, I went to Bali for a month and I went and volunteered down there. I just was kind of lost in the after baseball world. Didn't really know which way was up. And I was like, you know, what do I do? Like, what do I do with myself? I'm tired of playing golf. I'm tired of doing this, yada, yada. I was like, I know I'm good at helping people. Like, I like to help people. That makes me happy. So I went down to Bali and I remember sitting where I was. I was sitting on my mom's recliner and I'm out there and I'm kind of on the computer. I think it's dial up out there still in the freaking wilderness where she lives. So it was 20 minutes, you know, and I'm like waiting for the pages to load. And it's like, well, you know, where do I want to go to do this volunteer, you know, thing? And I was like, well, what do I want to do while I'm there? You know, how do I want to volunteer? And I just happened to be on Bali. I think I'd looked at New Zealand or, you know, a couple different places. And the page finally loaded for Bali. And I'm like, here's the options of, you know, the different things I can do. Pulled it down and one of them was construction. Well, I've always, you know, I've never lived in a place long enough to actually have to learn how to build something, man. Like switching from off season to season to off season to season. I'm in a place for 6 months. I was like, oh, construction. I would love, you know, to learn how to swing a hammer and nail, you know, type of deal. So I was like, Bali it is. And that's like how I decided to go down there. So I went down there and laid brick for 3 weeks. I was like, I didn't realize how they built their houses down there. I'm thinking like erecting a house, like you know,
carpenter work.
Exactly. Nope. I hauled dirt in a wheelbarrow for 4 or 5 hours a day. Oh, and when I got done hauling the dirt, I'd haul bricks over to where I hauled the dirt. And we did.
I was a mason laborer for years.
Were you really?
Oh yeah, that was one of my first gigs.
Stop it!
Oh yeah, I did it for. Actually, took a year off of school and did it for a year straight.
No kidding.
Did it in Atlanta.
Things you learn on the Jim Day podcast.
It's hard labor. We worked on these huge fireplaces.
Oh, yeah.
So scaffolding, we're talking like, you know, 12 stories in the air. Whew. And tonging one at a time. Tonging a full...
I don't know what tonging means.
Tong is a thing that you pick up the bricks with. So let's say a line of bricks. I gotcha. And you tong it up.
Uh-huh.
Like one by one.
No kidding.
It's the hardest work. Like I get off work and I'd be like, you guys want to go out? I'm like, no, I'm going to sleep.
Yeah.
The hardest work. But it set the stage for the rest of every job. Yeah. Like the simple thing.
Yeah. That's why I went down, and that is what this is, essentially. Like I read my first book when I was down, going back to the tattoo. That was the purpose of the trip, a personal growth mission I blogged about. I even did a blog about it for a little bit. Personal growth mission. I read a book while I was down there that was about the spirit of the warrior, not a warrior swinging a sword, like your inner guy. And the thing I took out of this book was. My underlying message was that there's goodness in all things. And I was having trouble finding that at the time. I mean, that's just the way, fact of the matter. So I remember being down there loading those bricks, man. And I just would kind of like pop down in the grass. These guys, you know, that were there to kind of oversee, you know, the foreman, I guess, they're there and they'd knock coconuts out of the tree and cut them open with an axe right there. And we'd sit there and drink coconut water out of a coconut.
Yeah.
You know, and just kind of sitting on the ground and I'm like, look at these butterflies over here. Like how beautiful, you know, and just things like that. So I had a guy translate it down there. I didn't get it down there. Didn't get the tattoo. I wanted to get the tattoo down there, but that is what it says. It says there's goodness in all things.
Wow.
In Balinese.
I did not know what was on. I've looked at that tattoo and I've always wanted to ask you. And I'm like, you know.
Yep. There it is.
Wow.
I'm actually getting there's a guy around here that actually is from Loveland. That's how I knew you were from that area.
The Loveland.
Yeah.
I live there.
Whatever.
I'm from Columbus, actually.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
All this. Tell me more. No, please.
Don't try to turn the tables on me.
So I'm getting so I want to make this area like my travel arm. Yeah. It's a tattoo guy that is up there in Loveland. So I'm working on putting together some ideas for that.
I know it was a tough transition from baseball to real life. Like, I've seen it 1,000 times because baseball whoever plays it at the highest level has done it their whole life. And that's all they've done, which is tremendous. But then when the baseball is taken away, and I know you didn't get to leave the game on your own terms, which is tough. That whole transition, I mean, how bad did it get?
That, what you just said right there, people, after I got done and, you know, couldn't figure it out, like during the transition, I was like, maybe I'll just start a podcast and start talking to guys about the transitional period because it's something that people just, I mean, it's just hard to comprehend that. Yeah. And it's the baseball. Yeah. Like you miss the baseball, you miss the people I'd say you miss the people the second most. The thing you miss the most is filling 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, and it's filled for you. All I had to do for 8 months of the year, and that's when I wasn't doing my off-season workout for three of those months, all I had to do was go and look at the dry erase board. And I knew what I was doing the next day, and I knew what time I had to be there, and that was it. All I had to do really was show up, and I knew I was going to have a full day's work ahead of me.
Right.
It was really tough, and... I guess I'll share a little. I don't like being overly personal with what it was, but so 16 was my last year. I got married right after that season, after I had moved from Cincinnati, you know, and kind of from everything, moved to a city where I didn't know anybody. So went from not having the game, not having a job or a purpose, being in a town I didn't know. Soon after that, my dad passed away. Soon after that, because I was in such a dark place, the woman I married not long before that then left too, all in a several month period.
Yeah,
that was like really heaped it up. That was just a lot of life. That was like four life altering things that happened over the course of 6 months, or even call it a year, either way. Either way, if it all happens in a year, like you can't you can't break down the one thing. It's like, because it rolls into the next. It's like, how do I compartmentalize and, you know, kind of deal with this and move past it? And then I've got, you know, it was a constant just cycle of running through all these things that had gone down and couldn't figure out why it happened and, you know, all this stuff. And that's why I went to, I mean, that's why I went to Bali. Like, yeah. I just couldn't find any goodness in my life. You know, and I'm sure some guys go to it to that degree and some guys go it to more and some guys go it to less and whatever the case may be. But, thankfully, Major League Baseball, the Players Association or whatever it is, they offer a transitional like course, you know, to where you can go on and you talk with a guy once a week for an hour. You take, you know, kind of one of those Briggs Stratton, I can't remember the name of it, kind of those like psychology tests or whatever. Went through that to kind of figure out, you know, what are you good at? What, you know, what qualities do you have that would be good in a certain industry? You know, media was one of them. My number one was a fireman. So while I was still living in Colorado, while I was going through this whole process, you know, with this transitional guy and, the number, like I said, the number one was a fireman, and it was just checked a ton of boxes for me as far as like helping people, being outside, having a team, being active, all this type of stuff. Yeah. So I was like enrolled to go to community college out there and become a fireman.
I did not know that.
When I like,
you'd be a good fireman.
I think I would. It was like, it was blew away kind of everything else.
Yeah.
And that's like, I had emailed, I think a couple months before, the guy who works for now Bally Sports Ohio, Bob, emailed him like, hey, you got anything kind of going on over there? Like, I'd love to get in and just see, because after, you know, doing it with you and,
yeah.
So he's like, no, we're all filled up, you know, can't. And this was, you know, maybe called October, November. It's like, no, we're all full up. We don't have anything for you to do. I'm like, oh, that's fine. You know, just, I was like, I'll do whatever. You know, I don't, I wasn't calling to ask to be on air or anything like that. Just whatever. I didn't know. Ignorant completely. So I'm enrolling, like go and have to get my transcripts to the University of Texas and send them over and, you know, do all this stuff to get going into this thing. And I mean, it's next week. Like, I'm going to school to start becoming a fireman. And he emails me like, hey, we've got an opportunity here for 35 games. Would you be interested? And I'm like, let me call you back. And I'm like, well, man, like, yeah, it's 35 games and, you know, you don't know, but you need to try it. Like, you can always go to school and be, you know, you can always go back and kind of do that. You need to do this while you're semi-relevant to the game. So,
and not many openings happen.
No,
as you know,
so no doubt. Well, there was one here for an analyst
you got to jump on it.
And so I, and thankfully I did, you know, so that was how it was going down, man. Like, he'd have texted 2 weeks later, I'd have been already going to school and probably had my mind made up.
Isn't that amazing how that happens?
It is wild. It's like one day you don't got a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. And the next thing somebody kind of gifts you now, you know, my second career here.
Right.
You know, with people that I've spent a lot of time around, yourself included, that I enjoy being around and can joke with, and I have a team.
Right.
I get to be around game. I get to talk, you know, like, so it all,
have you noticed that, he knows how to talk.
That checked a lot of boxes. This checks a lot of boxes too.
Yeah.
So that's kind of I'm thankful to do this job, man. And I know I get frustrated at times with different things, but now that I'm sitting here and thinking about, you know, really thinking about what path I could have gone down, I'm thankful to be here.
Well, it sounds like you were close to going down. And I know you were close to going down some paths. Yeah. So,
I'm not ashamed of that. I mean, like,
no, you shouldn't be.
People, like, I'm not ashamed. I know I make mistakes just like everybody else, but I don't hide from like who I am. Like, and sometimes that can rub people the wrong way and sometimes rubs me the wrong way, but you know, like that's who it is. And I know that, like, I think we talked about a little bit in the first go around that, I always look back on my failures and know that I wouldn't be whatever I am today, you know, without it. So I look back on them fondly in a lot of ways, that even though they were tough to go through at the time.
Fans and people look up to people that were in your position
so much, and they just think that, well, they're not human. They don't experience the same things I do. The downs, you know. There's no one that's depressed that's playing Major League Baseball or played it, or even in my, you know, I'm covering baseball. I have a dream job, and I'm so thankful for it. But they don't think that I go through.
You
normal
still got a
things.
Bad, yeah.
I have bad days, man. I've depression is real. I've had but times in my life. One of these days, maybe you will turn it on me. But I've had times in my life where I really fought depression hard, and it's one of those things that you're going to fight for your entire life. And it's real. So, you know, I think people need to hear that people like you have gone through stuff like that, because everyone has. And it helps to know that, you know what? He's been there. I've been there. He got out of it. I can get out of it.
I hope that's the case. Yeah. I hope by kind of sharing, that's why you can't be ashamed of that stuff. Like, you don't know who is listening that could be touched by that. And, you know, yeah. It could, I mean, that's like legitimately a friend of mine who actually I met through Ryan Ludwig. She used to nanny for them, or something. Now she's going to listen to this. Hey, Hannah, sweetest girl. She said, man, I just kind of needed a laugh this morning. And, you know, obviously our first episode was like a laugh, and, you know, yeah. But it's nice to share a laugh with somebody, but it's also nice to share the fact that you've gone through a tough time too. And somebody right now, I guarantee you there's another person in the world right now going through a tough time, and they're going to listen to that and think, soldier on, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. So don't be ashamed of where you come from.
Anyone out there that's listening right now, if you're going through a tough time, it happens to everyone.
Night as dark as just before the dawn.
There you go.
Right?
That is a great way to end this thing.
Before part 3, 4, and 5, and 6.
I still have things I want to talk to you about. Well, we never even talked about Dusty Baker, my man, Dusty Baker.
Well, you may have to find a I mean, I'll be here all year, so you may, yeah. On a day where the list is growing short, you can have me on again.
No, I appreciate the insight. I appreciate you opening up. I love going down memory lane. It's so good, man. It's great.
That was a lot of fun until it wasn't. No, but that's part of it. You know, I mean, that's I got to the big leagues for failures too. You know, like, I wouldn't have got there without failures too. So it's all part of the path. There is goodness in all things, Jim.
Well, I'm glad you're good now.
I am too.
And I wish nothing but goodness in the future.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
I'll give Sam Slate for the future. Help people.
How That's right. That? I like it. That's all you need to know.
All right. That is Sam LeCure, part deux with Sam LeCure. You like that?
Yeah.
Thanks for hanging out with us, everyone. Check me out on Twitter and Instagram. Harass me there. At Jim Day. At Jim Day TV. Creatively named.
By your staff.
A staff of one. Until next time, we will see you.